effect of the curse, which demanded it be consumed post-haste. Quite the powerful effect, considering both Boxy and Cora had formidable mental fortitude attributes. The shapeshifter had no intention of actually giving in to those urges, of course. This was obviously a trap, no matter how one looked at it. It wanted Cora to drink up first and serve as a test subject, but it had no idea how to tell her. Ah, perhaps the telepathic link might work?
Ignore what I said earlier and drink up.
This appeared to have been the right call.
Oh, yeah!
The fiend let out a rather rude-sounding cheer as she eagerly picked up the small gilded cup with both hands. It was quite hot to the touch. Unsurprising, considering this object had been created in a flash of lightning less than a minute ago. She placed the rim of the goblet against her mouth and tilted it so that the blood-like liquid flowed into it. The strange substance sprang to life the instant it touched her lips, and every last drop of it forced itself down her throat in an instant. She coughed violently at the sudden oral invasion and instinctively grabbed her throat, letting the goblet fall to the ground with a metallic clatter in the process. Her entire consciousness was suddenly enveloped by a searing pain that flared up across her entire body all at once. It overtook her in a flash, snuffing her life out before she got a chance to scream. Your familiar has been banished. Boxy stared curiously at the upright body of its familiar. The fact this cursed liquid was hazardous was hardly surprising considering the unholy part of the ritual. But it wondered how any of this could be considered wealth. That was when the demon's flesh started crumbling away, falling off her body in small bits and disappearing into nothingness before it even hit the ground. Several seconds later, Boxy witnessed the true effects of this curse. For when all of Cora's skin and muscle had fallen off, all that was left of her was a glittering, golden skeleton. Boxy stared reverently at the macabre sculpture, captivated by its esoteric beauty. But alas, as something born of mana, the transformed skeleton faded away into nothingness. Not even a second later, the only thing left of it was a fleeting memory.
No!
The monster let out a cry of frustration. It was really starting to get sick of all these disappearing shinies. First there was that wonderful treasure chest, and now this strangely alluring golden skeleton. It understood why it had happened, but that didn't make the event any less unpleasant. Deciding it wanted a permanent golden skeleton, the monster turned its attention to the shiny cup arms dropped earlier. The curse-carrying object thankfully hadn't rolled off the branch, either because it had landed upright or because it had stood up on its own after it had been dropped. It had also already refilled itself with the same cursed liquid that killed Arms. Boxy went up to the goblet and carefully picked it up. It felt an even stronger urge to chug the clearly deadly substance, but managed to resist long enough to safely tuck it away inside its storage. It then checked its demonology skill, noting with some disappointment that it was currently 96% of the way to level 8. The shapeshifter had clearly overestimated the amount of skill proficiency it would gain from the unholy wealth ritual. It then thought back on how the ability progressed fastest not by simply performing rituals, but by putting them to practical use. The implication was that utilizing the cursed cup, which was a byproduct of the demonology skill, could give it the final push it needed to reach the next level. Deciding that this endeavor was worth a try, Boxy rapidly made its way down the titanic tree to Azure Vale's ground level. Once again disguised as a ginger-haired elf, it stalked the streets until it reached a part of the city known as Dirt Town. This was the run-down and disreputable part of the Republic's capital, filled with slums, gambling dens, whorehouses, and positively overflowing with unsavory individuals. Once here, it made its way toward a certain abandoned warehouse tucked under the shadow of one of the dozens of oversized roots dominating the area. The building was one of the places groups of homeless bums typically liked to squat in. Even if the Republic was much better at taking care of its poor and downtrodden than, for instance, the Empire, it was inevitable that some people would fall through the cracks. Nobody of real consequence would notice if three or four of these unfortunate souls were to disappear. This made them excellent candidates for a midnight snack. Alternatively, They could also be used as unwitting test subjects for magical experiments with cursed items of demonic origin. Which, as luck would have it, was just the sort of thing that Boxy was looking for. The monster quietly climbed atop the sloped roof and peeked inside through a hole. Sure enough, it saw a trio of sleeping elves huddled around a small indoor campfire. Boxy moved in silently and relieved two of them of their worthless lives, then held the third one down under its deceptively heavy mass. The old man struggled and tried to scream, but his protests were expertly muffled by the experienced manhandler. The pauper ceased his struggling the instant Boxy showed him the gilded goblet. His one good eye shone with a dangerous, almost lustful light as he beheld its glory. As expected, those with a low or non-existent mental fortitude attribute were supremely more susceptible to this thing's influence than Boxy or Cora. The homeless man was proof enough of that, as he was obviously more interested in drinking from the shiny cup than preserving his own life. The former was the whole reason Boxy came down here, so not only did it let him drink, it practically force-fed him the contents of that cursed vessel. The man let out a gurgled scream as his entire body tensed up, then stopped moving entirely. The molten gold tears that poured out of his unmoving eyes and the shining teeth in his mouth revealed that the unholy wealth had taken effect. Looking inside his body with its MLG, Boxy confirmed that his bones had turned into the same metal it coveted. Proficiency level increased. Demonology is now level 8. Wisdom plus 2. Mental fortitude plus 2. Finally, not only did Boxy obtain a way to get more shiny things, but it had also... You have violated the taboo of Goroth and incurred the wrath of the gods. A special action has been performed. Faith minus 20. Proficiency level increased. Taboo is now level 1. Feat of strength performed. You have unlocked a new perk. Blasphemous Hero. Royally screwed itself. Part 5.
Crap, 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 crap!
Boxy let off a non-stop torrent of swearing as it ran around in a circle like a chicken with its head cut off. After about half a minute of this, it realized this behavior wasn't particularly constructive and stopped to assess the situation. If there was ever a time to lose its cool and freak out, this was most definitely it. However, this was most definitely not the place for it. It was still inside an abandoned warehouse, next to three corpses, where a night patrol might come to investigate. It hurriedly tossed the one with the golden skeleton inside its storage, gobbled up the other two, and thoroughly cleaned the crime scene. Afterwards, it stealthily left the building and slinked off into the night. It climbed up the side of the adjacent hilt tree until it reached a small, uninhabited branch far from prying eyes. It was as good a spot as any to stop and figure out what had just happened, so it did just that. First of all, the taboo skill. Boxy had heard much about it and its ill effects, so it knew it would throw a major wrench in its plans to blend in with the local adventuring community. Enlightened beings could sense anyone with the taboo skill, and treated them with a general sense of distrust and disgust, if not outright hostility. Such individuals were among the Maleficium Guild, usually warlocks and necromancers, who had tapped into some forbidden power or another. Such people were tolerated at best, but generally shunned and ostracized by the community. It was not a position Boxy wanted to be in, but it was the reality its public persona faced. For the moment, since it had acquired the taboo skill anyway, it decided it might as well personally check out its effects. Taboo. The mark of those who have committed grave sins or have willingly gone against the will of the gods. Requirements. Negative faith. Type. Passive. Range, self. Effects. You will be shunned by the pious. Increases the effectiveness of all forbidden practices and spells by 10% per level of the skill. Beware the wrath of the gods. Boxy had more or less expected something like this. The fact it seemed to have a benefit was a bit surprising, though. It now made sense why certain individuals willingly went further into taboo. The reason nasties, undead creatures, and hexes were so potent might have been because she claimed her taboo was at level 7. In hindsight, it was probably a good thing she wasn't around anymore, as a blasphemous existence of that magnitude was bound to be a trouble magnet. The real question was, how would one get rid of this stigma? Boxy already had an idea of how it could happen. Skills would be disabled and rendered unusable should their owner cease to meet their requirements. Therefore, if it no longer had negative faith, then this skill should lose its effects. Come to think of it, the skill itself did not inflict an attribute change, but was a direct result of one. More specifically, the faith penalty caused by whatever blasphemous act Boxy had performed, which changed the spiritual attribute from 18 to negative 2. In other words, it only needed to gain 2, possibly 3 points of faith in order to rid itself of the taboo. Boxy was suddenly immensely thankful it absorbed that divine attunement skill earlier. Otherwise, this might have been a much more difficult thing to overcome. Snack could cover for its absence for a while, but it was still best if it could get this over with before dawn. It just needed to think of how to do that. Leveling up Doppelganger or any of the related skills that boosted all attributes was an obvious solution, but there was no way it could accomplish that before dawn. Perhaps seeking out a priest or paladin trainer would be good? That job would definitely provide an increase in faith and could easily be removed once the doppelganger job gained a few levels. Boxy honestly did not want another job to worry about, though, as it was already spending every waking moment training one aspect of its status or another. Therefore, it would maliciously abuse its position as hero and... Wait, wasn't there something else it got alongside taboo? Blasphemous hero. One who has betrayed the trust of their divine patron. Requirements? Hero. Taboo. Effects? Hero skills are disabled and cannot be used. Boxy let out a roar of frustration. This was bad. Really, really bad. So bad it almost made the shapeshifter want to vomit up those homeless people. The main linchpin of its infiltration operation, the sole thing that allowed it to integrate fully into civilized society, was gone. People trusted appraisals to an almost outlandish degree. Why wouldn't they? It was a reliable magic that revealed one's true identity and abilities, so Boxy's ability to subvert that had been like a free pass to do whatever it pleased. Within reason, of course. As expected of a skill granted by the gods, having essence concealment truly felt like cheating. That said, the ability wasn't foolproof. Fayhorn seemed to catch on that Kira was more than she seemed, seeing as how he pulled that laughable test of his. If his mock ambush truly came out of nowhere, then Boxy might have reacted as expected. However, the ex-mimic's magical perception had easily spotted the old elf's approach and intent, so it had been ready. After all, it wasn't like it would die, even if Kira's head was separated from the rest of her. A doppelganger's brain was inside their spinal column, so bisection was actually deadlier to Boxy than decapitation. The shapeshifter realized it had gone off on a mental tangent, likely a subconscious effort to escape the reality in which it was royally screwed. Without being able to bypass appraisal, it would be incredibly difficult to maintain its fake life as an aspiring adventurer. Worst case scenario, it would have to abandon civilization altogether, which would eliminate its main source of doppelganger XP. This was where it started to envy that golem, as she had somehow gotten the locals to accept her and lived among them even with her monstrous features.
Wait, that's it,
it exclaimed internally. Boxy. Ambrosia, is Fizzy back at the dungeon yet? Ambrosia. Indeed, m'lord, she hath just arrived. Boxy. Great, show her to the emergency exit I installed yesterday. Ambrosia. Right away, m'lord. Surely the paladin would have some sort of solution. The taboo skill would put a momentary strain on their relationship, but she had already pledged herself to Boxy's service, so it would probably be fine. Come to think of it, wasn't that dryad some kind of a quasi-divine being? Wouldn't she be the one most disgusted with the taboo skill? It seemed logical, but then how come she was acting as if nothing had happened? Was it the Corps' influence at work? Or did she simply not realize because the two hadn't met box to face yet? Boxy decided it would be wise to ask her, though in a slightly roundabout way. Boxy: Ambrosia, what do you think of me? Ambrosia: What hath come over thee, my lord? Boxy: What do you mean? Ambrosia: 'Tis the first time thou hath inquired after mine opinion. Boxy: There's a first time for everything, right? So please, answer me as truthfully as you can. Ambrosia: If my lord insists, then I shall oblige. There was a brief pause as the dryad presumably gathered her thoughts. Ambrosia: This one believes my lord Morningwood is an outstanding individual with potential the likes of which I hath never seen. Thy insight and adaptability concerning the world at large are truly worthy of praise. My lord also takes great care so as not to disrespect or harm mine body in any way, for which this one is truly grateful. Thy generosity and kindness hath touched this old soul deeply, and I find myself wishing to spend more time in thy company. 'Tis also a rare opportunity for me to care for a youngling, which I find to be most fulfilling. That was not quite what Boxy expected. Or rather, wasn't that way too high an opinion considering they only met a few days ago? Not to mention that the shapeshifter was pretty sure it hadn't done anything nearly as great or benevolent as the things the dryad was describing. Then again, this attitude was likely due to the Dungeon Corps' influence twisting her perception of events. This was still good news, however, as the dryad seemed oblivious to Boxy's taboo, at least for the moment. The doppelganger really didn't want to test the limits of the Dungeon Corps' ability to keep an ancient being like Ambrosia in check, hence why it wanted to keep its heretical inclinations a secret from her as much as possible. To that end, the monster stealthily made its way over to the tree housing both its new lair and Kira's home. It climbed up to the hidden dungeon entrance, where it waited patiently for Fizzy's arrival. She couldn't abuse Nexus access, which meant she had to climb up via the stairs. A minute or so passed before the disguised door swung open from the inside, and the mithril golem shone brilliantly under the triple moonlight poking through the tree's vast canopy.
"Hey, Boxy,"
she said in her usual, cheerful tone.
"What did... Ah! Oh my god!"
Well, that didn't last long. Her face twisted into a scowl, as if she was staring at a disgusting cockroach she wanted to squish at all costs. It was the same look she kept giving Nasty back when the Lich was still around, though slightly more subdued.
"I accidentally committed a taboo," Boxy informed her.
Yeah, I can feel that,"
she cringed.
"What in Ricardo's holy donut did you do, Boxy?"
The shapeshifter explained the evening's events, starting with the ritual and ending with it obtaining the taboo skill. Fizzy did her best to listen, but it was obvious she was having a hard time even looking at Boxy. The way she made the juvenile doppelganger feel could best be summed up as not tasty.
"Yeah, I think I understand what happened,"
she said, averting her gaze.
"You transmuted something into gold, a valuable metal. Goroth hates that sort of thing. He's the god of artists and artisans, someone who values perseverance and hard work above all else. Having people create expensive minerals for quick and easy profit really grinds his gears."
She then threw Boxy a brief, disgusted look before turning away again.
"Also, it's impossible to accidentally commit a taboo. You knew full well that hobo's bones would turn to gold when you did the deed, and you intentionally made him drink the cursed stuff."
"I didn't know Goroth would hate it, though,"
it argued.
"Not knowing a law doesn't mean you're exempt from it,"
she shot back.
"Well, what about arms? That guy was clearly okay with me shining her up, so what's up with that?"
"She's a demon, though. I mean, it's not like her skeleton stuck around after you made her drink, right?"
"Okay, yeah, I see your point," it conceded. "Look, I need your help getting rid of this taboo thing right away. It should be possible, right?"
"Depends. How much in the negative are you? Your faith attribute, I mean."
-2.
"Okay, that's good. So long as it doesn't go beyond -10, then it's a relatively easy fix. Just to make it clear, you do regret doing what you did, right?"
"Kind of. Mostly because of the taboo skill, though."
"Well, that's better than nothing. So, kneel down, Bow your head and stand still so I can take care of it.
Okay. The elf-shaped monster assumed the position without protest, allowing the golem to easily place her hands on its shoulders. She hated having to, though. The way her fingers twitched, despite her mechanical constitution, made that abundantly clear, as did the near bone-crushing grip her digits eventually settled into. She then closed her eyes and spoke in a soft voice, or at least as soft a voice as a mechanical throat and metal mouth could produce.
Oh, merciful gods, behold this poor child who ignored your will. It has ventured into sin out of ignorance and curiosity, and has unwittingly violated your most sacred decrees. It has expressed the desire to repent in both mind and body, and solemnly swears to uphold your values forevermore. Your servant begs you, forgive this lost soul for its heretical actions.
A soft, white radiance flowed out from the gnome's body, ran across her arms, and flowed into Boxy's faux wood frame.
Absolution!
A pious servant of the gods has absolved you of your grievous sins. A special action has been performed. Faith plus 5. Proficiency level decreased. Taboo is no longer available. Feat of strength performed. You have unlocked a new perk. Seeker of Redemption. The blasphemous hero perk has been removed since you no longer meet the required conditions. The golem let out a small sigh and opened her eyes. Her face instantly slackened to her regular smiling expression.
All done,
she declared. Boxy quickly checked its status, just in case. It was relieved to find that all of the offensive entries were gone, and its faith attribute was at a healthy plus 3.
Wow! That was easy! It exclaimed in surprise.
That brief ceremony was much more convenient than temporarily picking up the paladin job from Fizzy or scrambling to get level ups. As for Seeker of Redemption, the perk had absolutely no effects whatsoever, and merely served as a badge of honor for those who turned their backs on Taboo. Honestly speaking, Boxy preferred it doing nothing. It was rapidly learning that perks were sometimes more trouble than they were worth.
Thanks, Fizzy,
it said, clearly in a good mood.
I'll be counting on you the next time, too.
Oh, no. No, 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 no.
Fizzy waved her hands around angrily.
Don't even think about using that unholy wealth thing again. Absolution is not a ceremony that can be used lightly. It drains away my own faith attribute to cast it, you know? Not to mention it will only work 2 or 3 times per person, and that's only if they're lucky. That might as well have been your only pardon.
Forgiveness, it would seem, was a very finite resource.
I see. I guess it can't be helped then.
The monster regretfully conceded that the cursed goblet in its storage would have to be put away for the foreseeable future.
What about the guy I already transmuted?
It asked a moment later.
I don't know, to be honest. Trying to profit off his golden bones might trigger another taboo violation.
I'm not going to sell them, though. I just want to add his skeleton to my collection.
Right. I'll have to ask the guys at the guild later, so don't do anything rash before that, okay?
All right. Wait, guild? You joined one?
Yeah, the Hammers of Horkensaft. Many people in that artisan's guild worship Goroth, so there's a good chance someone there has the answers you're looking for.
And you have no problems blending in with those guys?
Not at all. They love me over there.
She proudly puffed out her chest.
They've never had an Arclight Artificer before, so they're really interested in my work. They're also a bunch of dwarves and gnomes, so they're not too bothered by having a golem around. Well, I guess it's a bit annoying to have those lowly meatbags asking to examine my mithril frame, but for the most part, they seem content to just admire my flawless construction from afar.
Boxy completely understood that attitude. Fizzy's shininess was truly breathtaking at times, so their behavior was only to be expected. Come to think of it, dwarves seemed to enjoy shiny things almost as much as Boxy did. The shapeshifter realized it might be a good idea to get better acquainted with them, mostly to see if they had anything especially shiny worth stealing. Having a bunch of coins and gemstones was well and good, but it really wanted to get its tentacles on some purely decorative stuff like statuettes or ceremonial armor. Variety was, after all, the spice of life. With the taboo crisis swiftly averted, Boxy went back into the dungeon and moved to the dungeon core platform with Fizzy in tow. Ambrosia had been patiently waiting for Boxy's return, while still hanging on to Minik. Now that she had the chance, she presented the golem with the bracelet of allegiance she had prepared in advance, which was graciously accepted. The dryad's expression became slightly more relaxed the instant Fizzy put the simple-looking bracelet on her right wrist. As expected, Ambrosia did feel a bit uneasy around invaders in her dungeon, even if they were Milord's servants. Boxy, on the other hand, made sure to turn on the surveillance net's intruder alerts, just in case. Then came the moment that the shapeshifter had been looking forward to for literally the entire latter half of its life.
You have reached Demons R Us.
Boxy got the usual textbook greeting, although that smooth, silky, almost sensual voice was not one it had heard before.
My name is Janet, and I will be your liaison today.
Yeah, okay. That definitely wasn't who it expected.
Hello?
Janet asked after a few seconds of silence.
Where's Carl?
I'm sorry, sir, but... Oh. Oh! Oh my god! Is this Boxy?
It is.
The Boxy T. Morningwood?
Yes.
Oh, wow! This is so cool! I am a huge fan of your work.
Okay.
I mean it. I loved every single thing I've seen you do. I think my personal favorite was the way you smashed that Jade King fellow or whatever his face was. Like, he didn't even get a chance to show off before you annihilated him. It was amazing. Oh, damn. The girls are never going to believe I got to speak with the Hero of Chaos.
So, where's Carl?
Asked Boxy, making sure to make the irritation clear in its tone.
Oh, who cares about Carl? Let's talk about you.
I'm hanging up now.
No, Mr. Morningwood, sir, please wait.
Okay. That was weird. This entire day was just one surprise after the other. Admittedly, a little excitement every now and then wasn't a bad thing. But this was too much. Whoever that woman was, it didn't seem like...
Demons R Us called Boxy back a few seconds later, prompting it to immediately answer.
Hello?
Hey, buddy.
Carl, finally! You would not believe how unprofessional that Janet person was.
The shapeshifter had a few opinions regarding the demonic agency, but chief among them was that it expected employees to conduct themselves in an appropriate manner.
Yeah, tell me about it. Look, I'm sorry you had to hear that. It's just that we're a bit swamped right now, what with the lunar convergence going on. The system's overloaded, so some folks get redirected to the wrong devils, some of whom are kinda new. Janet's one of those rookies, and her conduct was completely unacceptable. I give you my personal guarantee you won't be connected to anyone other than me ever again.
Good enough for me.
So, what can I help you with today, Boxy?
Well, the original purpose was to obtain its third demonic contract as a result of reaching level 8 of its demonology skill. However, a more pressing question was on Boxy's mind right now.
Before that, I would like to clarify something.
I'll do my best to answer any and all concerns you may have, so long as they fall within the scope of your contract.
How come Janet knew everything I was doing?
It sounded like she'd been made privy to Boxy's entire life. It wasn't just her, either. Carl had hinted at knowing a lot more about the shapeshifter's exploits during previous conversations. Overlord Leosora's note was also strangely casual and familiar, almost as if she had been familiar with the creature prior to being summoned.
That's probably your familiar's fault. They brag incessantly, you know?
Carl, you're bullshitting me right now. Either tell me what's going on, or I'm going to personally complain to Tracy. You wouldn't want that now, would you?
Admittedly, Boxy had no idea how to contact the Goddess of Discord, but Carl hopefully didn't know that.
Yeah, okay.
The otherworldly entity conceded with a sigh.
You're bound to find out eventually, so I might as well tell you. You know how the big boss upstairs keeps a very close eye on everything you're doing, purely for entertainment?
I'm aware, yes. What of it?
So, he's been sort of sharing your adventures with the rest of us.
What? Why?
Blessed if I know. He probably thought it would be fun.
Can he even do that?
Yes. Remember those broadcasts I mentioned a while back?
Right, that. So, he's been showing what I do to everyone at Demons R Us?
That's one way of putting it,
Carl said evasively.
It's not just those who work at Demons R Us, is it?
No.
Boxy took a deep breath.
How many?
Well, it's hard to get an accurate number on account of...
How many demons, Carl?
All of them.
All of them? You're saying every single demon out there knows what I've been up to?
Pretty much.
Since when?
Ever since you became a hero. Although, there are reruns while you sleep, so... We've seen pretty much everything since the Monotol thing.
Well, do you guys have to watch me?
No, not really. We can tune out the progenitor's broadcasts of the Boxy Show if we wish. It's just that we have literally nothing better to do over here.
Can they see me right now?
Oh, yeah. You're in the corner of my mind as we speak, just sort of sitting there in the tree, doing nothing in particular.
What about this conversation?
Demons R Us considers contracts a private matter, so you can be assured this call isn't part of the broadcast. Same goes for most forms of telepathic communication, but audio and visual stuff comes through loud and clear.
You could have told me about this sooner, you know.
What, and ruin the fun?
Boxy took a few moments to process the demon's words. It analyzed their implications and decided on a course of action.
At least I'm popular, right?
Janet's reaction would suggest as much, but getting some actual confirmation seemed like a good idea.
Oh, immensely so. A recent survey said all but 4% of demons tuned in to the Boxy Show on a daily basis. We've had a bunch of other similar broadcasts with Abraham's previous heroes, but yours is by far the biggest hit we've seen.
Then it's okay if I take a few minutes to address my audience, right?
I guess. It's your show. You can do whatever you damn well please. And you usually do. That's what makes this whole thing so interesting in the first place.
Good. That's good. Can you hold for a few minutes?
Sure.
Boxy told Ambrosia and Fizzy to go about their business, then used Nexus Access to return to the highest point in the dungeon. It climbed back up to the site where the unholy wealth ritual took place and reverted into its base doppelganger form. It stared intently at a random point in the horizon for a few seconds, and then its featureless face split open like a fleshy book filled with teeth.
"Hello, demons and demonettes," it stated in a clear, commanding voice. "In case some of you have not realized, there is currently an opening for the position of my third contracted familiar. I will be finalizing said contract in 3 hours' time. If any of you think you have what it takes to fulfill that role, then please contact Carl from Demons R Us with your application. I will only accept the most motivated of applicants, so make sure you demand to be picked while entering this little contest."
It tilted its head slightly and showed a toothy, sideways smile.
"I trust the best of you will not back down in the face of your clearly inferior competitors."
Of course, there was nobody around in the dead of night to actually answer Boxy's provocative words, except for a certain devil that was still on the other end of the transdimensional call.
"What was that about?"
"What?"
Boxy asked innocently.
"You know how much of a massive pain in the ass this will be to deal with? I've already got like 40 demons lined up outside my office screaming over each other. Why not just make a contract the usual way?"
"Oh, dear. That simply won't do," it responded sarcastically. I suppose doing things the usual way might be for the best after all.
Then tell that to the rest of them before this gets out of hand!
What?
The shapeshifter smirked internally.
And ruin the fun?
Chapter 3 Claws Part 1
Gotta admit, Boxy, you got balls,
Carl grumbled over the line.
Very few warlocks would even think of pulling a prank like that.
It was now the promised 3 hours after Boxy's familiar competition. While the shapeshifter spent that time alternating between artificer practice with Fizzy and having fun with its collection of shinies, Carl had to deal with hundreds, possibly thousands of calls from selfish demons. That said, it was likely none of them were actually all that serious, and they just played along with the doppelganger scheme for shits and giggles.
Just getting a bit of payback for that Boxy show thing, it stated plainly.
What, on me?
Who else?
The monster really did not take kindly to having an untold number of demons watching its every move. While the main perpetrator was the god of impossibilities, the simple creature lacked a way to get back at him. Therefore, it lashed out at the most convenient target. However, it had failed to consider that this little stunt might piss off a bunch of demons that might have revealed its secret identity to the world purely out of spite. Thankfully, the goddess of chance took her non-interference policy seriously and gave each and every resident of the Beyond a gag order. They were not to disclose the existence or contents of the Boxy show to mortals if they valued their ongoing existence. This was also why neither Zira nor Korra could tell their master about it, as neither of them were sure whether that limitation also applied to the star of the show. As much as they liked working under the shapeshifter, there was someone else higher up the pecking order they couldn't afford to ignore. At least they could speak freely about it now that a certain someone had already spilled the beans.
Okay, I may have deserved that a little bit,
Carl admitted.
Right then. Shall we get on with the familiar selection process?
You're not going to sabotage my contract or something, right?
Of course not. It takes a lot more than a silly thing like that to make an old devil like me compromise an agreement.
Devils were pretty much the only demons who used violence as a last resort. They weren't partial to punching mortals in the face, instead preferring to trick them into soul-binding contracts with bittersweet promises of power, then reveling in the suffering that followed. Very few of them ever made an appearance in the physical realm, preferring to do their dirty business from the beyond. Or at least, that was how they had been in ages past when Demons R Us hadn't been established yet. These days, they mostly served as operators and agents and were, in general, a lot less malicious. One thing that had remained the same was the strict and unapologetic way they abided by all clauses of any contracts they had made. They adhered to those things as if their very existence hinged on it. That was probably why their kind was officially in charge of managing warlock-familiar relations. Boxy's recently upgraded demonology skill revealed this information, which allowed the monster to make the following deduction.
In other words, you won't screw me on the contract, but you'll still get me back somehow.
Better believe it, Buster.
Heh.
The two shared a small chuckle as Boxy set aside the explosive device it had been working on, giving Carl its undivided attention.
Ready when you are, Carl.
All right. Give me a minute to pull up the relevant forms here. Oh, forward me your status like before.
Boxy did as instructed and waited while listening to the all-too-familiar clacking noises from across the line. Now that the shapeshifter thought about it, what were those about? Well, it would just ask another time. It really didn't want to put off this contract any more than it had to, and the sun was about to come up. Not that it worried about Rowana waking up, though. Snack was still next to the elf and diligently kept her magically sedated. It was hardly the first time they had done this, although Boxy had to make sure it gave her specific orders not to mess with the elf while she slept. Simply keeping Rowana asleep took very little effort on Zira's behalf, which left the demoness bored with nothing to do. This was something her master failed to take into account the first time it had to sneak out of that house at night. When it returned a few hours later, it found the succubus toying with the blissfully unaware elf to keep herself entertained. Rowana's face had penises scribbled all over it, her nose and mouth were caked with questionable fluids, and the succubus was moments away from shaving off the elf's pubic hair. Boxy somehow managed to clean up all traces of her antics without Rowana realizing she'd been molested. The shapeshifter also had to thoroughly punish Zira for her misbehavior afterwards. That, incidentally, had been exactly what the succubus wanted in the first place.
"Okay, everything appears to be in order," Carl eventually declared. "Well then, what species are you looking to form a covenant with this time?"
This was actually something Boxy had been thinking on for a long while. While it was entirely possible to have another succubus or fiend around, it wouldn't be very practical. Although flexible to a degree, a demonic familiar was essentially a tool. There was a right and wrong way to use it, and having more of the same tool didn't mean the work would get done any faster or easier. Therefore, of the remaining types of demon available, Boxy chose the one it felt would fit in best with its posse's composition.
Stalker!
The shapeshifter's current entourage sorely lacked when it came to stealth. Boxy always found itself having to leave Fizzy, Snack, and Arms behind whenever it wanted to sneak around. This left it without immediate backup should things go awry. Granted, Snack could sometimes accompany it with her invisibility, but she lacked a means of silently eliminating a target. The other two were right out. Therefore, a stalker's natural aptitude for skulking around made it a perfect candidate. Not to mention their vaunted anti-magic abilities would surely help protect the shapeshifting monster from its dreaded bane. Lightning-based magic.
"All right, if you say so,"
came Carl's strangely delayed response.
"What? You got a problem with it?"
"No, no. It's your decision. Male or female?"
"Female."
According to the high-level demonology skill, female stalkers were generally slimmer and lither than males, making them better at hiding. Having less muscle mass than the males also meant their melee attacks would struggle to take down armored targets, but that wasn't something Boxy was particularly concerned with.
"Height preference?"
"Mid-range."
Too tall, and it would mean the demon would be too big a target. Too small, and its attack range would suffer.
"And I'm assuming one with a large chest, right?"
Boxy very nearly answered yes on reflex, but stopped itself due to a sudden epiphany. The chest-shaped monster turned its thoughts towards Cora and Zira, and the only thing their physical appearances had in common. Namely, the quartet of watermelon-sized lumps of fat upon the front side of their torsos.
Carl? This question about chest size, does it perhaps refer to breasts?
"Of course it does. What else would..." "Oh."
There was a moment of awkward silence as both parties realized their mutual misunderstanding.
"So then,"
said Carl, trying to get the contract process back on track.
"Do you want a familiar with large or small tits?"
"You said it doesn't impact their performance, right?"
"That's right."
"Then whatever is fine."
"Large it is."
"Hey!"
Boxy protested over the mind link.
"What? You said you didn't care."
"I meant I have no preference. Not the same thing."
Carl clicked his tongue.
"Fine. Spoil sport. Moving on, would you say you're more of an evening person or a morning person?"
"I don't think I qualify as a person, Carl."
"Good point. Neither it is. Which do you think is more dangerous, one giant-sized goblin or 100 goblin-sized giants?"
"The latter."
"What's your second least favorite color?"
There were several more such questions that seemed entirely unrelated to the matter at hand. Boxy had no idea why it was forced to answer these, but it had already given up on questioning or arguing the process. After the first two times, it had just come to accept this nonsensical survey as part of the process. It didn't even need to answer truthfully either, so it played along with Carl's script until he finally came around to the last question.
"Only if they have toes," Boxy stated confidently.
"Heh, that's a new one. And finally, do you have any additional requests or requirements regarding your contract?"
It was something Boxy had been woefully unprepared to answer previously. It hadn't realized it at the time, but this question was arguably as important as the first. The monstrous warlock simply hadn't known any better when it recruited Snack and Arms, so it had to rely on Carl's interpretation of its wishes. While things had somehow worked out relatively well, it hadn't been until Boxy got its demonology to level 6 that it fully understood the importance of this deceptively simple question. When contracting a new familiar, the warlock's first answer dictated their new servant's species, but their last answer determined the subspecies that would be assigned to them. While one could argue that all succubi, for instance, were basically the same, each type of succubus was notably different from the rest. For instance, only cerulean succubi like Zira could manipulate dreams and fantasies. Viridian ones, on the other hand, could produce various magical sedatives and poisons, which they used to drug their prey. Then there was the violet variant of succubi, sadistic and calculating creatures with an unnatural gift for spatial manipulation magic. In short, considering the various alternatives, Boxy had been quite fortunate to have ended up with Snack. It was certain that, with everything it had been through, it would not have survived this long if it had wound up with one of the aforementioned alternatives. The same couldn't be said about Arms, though, as all fiends adhered to the stereotype of big, angry thing that hits things until they die, with only minor variations. In any event, drawing upon both its expanded knowledge and past experiences allowed Boxy to determine exactly the type of stalker it wanted for its third familiar.
"First and foremost, I want a hornet variant."
This particular subspecies had access to a paralytic venom that could either hinder, subdue, or outright kill a target, depending on the dosage and circumstances.
"They also need to be a competent rogue adept at assassinating casters," it continued. "Especially shamans, wizards, and cryomancers."
The best way to deal with a wielder of the arcane arts was to eliminate them before they even knew someone was there, and those three occupations were especially troublesome. According to Boxy's research, shamans and wizards were the primary sources of lightning magic. Though not all of them specialized in such spells, they were still some of the biggest threats to the shapeshifter's life. The doppelganger was also quietly thankful that there seemed to be no such thing as an electromancer job, as that would have been seriously bad news. As for cryomancers, those were on the list because their magic could freeze a shapeshifter's malleable flesh in place, potentially depriving Boxy of its most versatile ability.
"Well, aren't you a discerning customer?"
Carl asked in genuine surprise.
"It feels like it was only 3 months ago you asked me if the Beyond is tasty."
"It was 3 months ago."
Also, Boxy never got an answer as to whether or not the Beyond was, in fact, tasty, but it decided not to push the issue.
"Oh, right. Anyway, let me just finish writing all that down. Okay, all set. Now, we just need to wait for it and... yep, there it is. A near instant 100% match to absolutely nobody's surprise."
Well, except for Boxy's. It had expected that finding a demon to match its specific demands would take longer. But this was not the case. Perhaps its popularity meant a lot of demons were eager to fill in the slot and enjoy the same privileges that Snack and Arms had.
"There you go. Your third familiar is all set up and ready for action. Will that be all for today?"
"Yes."
"Would you like to fill out a survey to help improve our customer service?"
"Yes, actually."
"Well, that's too bad, because we don't have something like that. Thank you for calling Demons R Us. We'll be in touch."
Boxy wasn't quite sure what it expected from that survey, but that definitely wasn't it. Oh well. The important thing was that it finally obtained a third demonic servant. Thinking it was perhaps a noteworthy occasion, it told Fizzy and Ambrosia to gather around to witness the new girl's first summoning. It even summoned arms back first, just so she could join in. The fiend seemed rather excited to meet her new colleague, mostly because she was eager for a fresh set of holes to violate. As for the old set, which was to say, Zira, she was on Ruana sitting duty and wouldn't show up until later. With the audience gathered, Boxy activated its Summon Familiar skill while focusing on the third being linked to its soul. The concentric circles of light spun around for the usual seconds, followed by a small flash. A low chitter could just barely be heard as something burst out of the lingering magical glow and skittered away from the spider-chested doppelganger at breathtaking speed. Even Boxy had difficulty tracking the thing as it slinked off into the shadows, but it wasn't as if it particularly needed to.
"Stop running away and come to me!"
The simple command was all the weird, person-sized spider thing needed to cease its retreat. It then turned around and, strangely enough, stood up as it slowly approached the shapeshifter. The newest addition to Boxy's entourage was revealed to be a mostly humanoid demon, about 160 centimeters in height. It, or rather, she, was clearly female, with thick thighs, wide hips, a thin waist, and a relatively modest pair of breasts, at least when compared to the succubus's impractically huge knockers. She had black hair styled into a slightly elaborate ponytail with heavy bangs on the right side, all held together by hair clips made of chitin. Her face was also clearly feminine in its contours, except for the large pair of serrated mandibles growing out of the sides and past her chin. There was also the matter of four tiny fang things poking out of the corners of her lips, and the yellow compound eyes that looked like a bug's. Those sharp choppers were definitely the main attention-getters in the facial region, though. The jagged tips clacked together nervously, producing a barely audible chitter the entire time. The rest of her body had a number of arachnid and clearly monstrous features. Her skin, for instance, seemed to be comprised of two layers of segmented carapace. One lower one was soft, reddish-purple, slightly moist, and served as the demon's skin. It was adorned by a number of yellow, crescent-shaped marks, two on each cheek, bicep, and thigh. The upper layer of carapace was a much darker hue of red than the lower one and was also visibly more solid, sort of like armor. Sort of being the operative phrase here, as it barely covered any of her torso and made it seem like she wore a bikini, even though it was part of her body. This tougher set of carapace also covered her shoulders and the outer parts of her limbs, where it was much thicker. Speaking of limbs, this arachnid demon had some positively deadly ones. Her arms and legs ended in a set of large claws that looked like flexible knives, with two toes on each foot and three fingers on each hand. Those sharp digits likely made it impossible for her to grip anything even remotely soft without dicing it up. The deadliest appendages she had were the six long limbs poking out from either side of her chest. These looked faintly like arachnid legs that were attached to the girl's upper back, except their tips were replaced with long and thin, scythe-like claws. Each of these bladed appendages had a slightly longer reach than her dagger-tipped arms, and was just as flexible to boot. The freshly summoned demoness fidgeted nervously for several seconds as Boxy took in her appearance.
"She looks great," it commented with approval. "Every part of her looks like it was designed to maim people."
These words of praise made the spider girl fidget even more as she turned her face to the side, wanting to avoid meeting anyone's gaze.
"She's really fast, too,"
Fizzy chimed in.
"I couldn't even keep my eyes on her when she made a run for it earlier."
"Milord's newest servant is most impressive,"
Ambrosia added with a surprisingly cheerful voice.
"Spiders aren't natural predators of vermin, so I am certain she will be of great help to me."
"Ah, crap. She's a stalker,"
Cora grumbled.
"That means she probably doesn't have any useful holes down there."
She remembered that fiends and succubi were more or less the only demons whose physical forms had somewhat functioning genitalia, mostly because they were the only ones that actively used them. It was part of who they were. A stalker, however, was motivated by food and solitude, not the sort of demon that would partake in sexual domination or lethal intercourse. This meant that Cora had to give up on her selfish ploy to break in the new girl. One could argue that the arachnid demon still had a mouth that could be used, but even the pit fiend would hesitate to put her junk anywhere near those mandibles. The spider girl suddenly let out a quiet voice that sounded surprisingly youthful, though she failed to actually say anything with it.
My name is... That is,
Her mandibles clicked and chittered audibly as she tried and failed to articulate her thoughts. It seemed to be some kind of nervous tic that she couldn't control, as she grew more flustered the louder it got. This, in turn, only made the chittering more intense. It took her a few seconds of increasingly awkward stammering before she realized she was getting nowhere. She closed her eyes, took a few deep breaths, and finally managed to introduce herself to her new master.
My name is Doria Heath Uniofi Almaramakartor,
she rapidly squeaked out.
I look forward to serving you.
Just as Boxy expected, it was another pointlessly long name that was difficult to pronounce. It was both bothersome to say and a potential hindrance when things got heated in battle. Much as it had done with Zira and Cora, it decided to give its third familiar a thoroughly uninspired nickname of her own.
Your name is now Claws, it firmly declared.
Understood,
she shouted.
I shall work myself to the bone for you, Master Morningwood.
Good. I look forward to seeing you in action. For now, let's set some ground rules.
It quickly gave the newcomer the same set of standing orders it gave the other familiars. First and foremost, she was to protect its life and inform it the instant she detected anything or anyone that was a legitimate threat. Secondly, she was to never undertake any action that would compromise its cover as either Kira or the Sandman, unless she had been expressly ordered to. This stipulation included the indiscriminate murder of civilians, as that sort of thing tended to attract the wrong kind of attention. Thirdly, she was to listen to and obey Boxy's non-demonic followers, which was to say Ambrosia and Fizzy, to the best of her ability, so long as what they wanted didn't violate either of the previous 2 points. These were the main ones, though each major rule also had a bunch of supplementary stipulations that covered all of the details and what-ifs the shapeshifter could think of. It didn't trust its familiars not to mess things up, even if they didn't mean to, so it resorted to carrying out what was essentially a sermon every time it had to summon one of them. Neither Snack nor Arms tried to conceal their displeasure at hearing the same old boring instructions all the time, but Claws's attitude was different. The nervous spider girl seemed surprisingly earnest, replying to each statement with nothing more than a hesitant nod of affirmation.
All right. I think that's everything, Boxy stated as it wrapped things up a few minutes later. I'd like to give your abilities and skills a proper tryout right away, but it's almost dawn, and I have a gullible elf to attend to. We'll put off the field test until tonight, but I feel confident you will not disappoint me, Claws.
Of course not,
Drea quickly added.
Good. Now then, I'll leave you to get better acquainted with the others.
With that settled, Boxy started focusing on the transfamiliar spell.
Master, I have something else to say.
It was then rudely interrupted by the stalker's loud outburst. The shapeshifter wondered what could be so important that she couldn't just use the mental link between them. Or rather, if what she wanted to say was something of actual substance, then surely telepathy would have been a preferable method of communication to plain speech. Still, it wasn't in any sort of rush, so it decided to humor her for now.
What is it, Claws?
Well, the thing is that,
Drea started hyperventilating, but managed to pause and steady her breathing, much like how she had done earlier.
I love you!
That's nice.
Her sporadic and highly unusual confession seemed to fall on deaf hinges, as Boxy replied in a thoroughly casual and uninterested tone without missing a beat.
I'll be going now.
Drea stood in stunned silence with her arms and sickle legs wrapped around her as if she was hugging herself. Her mouth opened and closed multiple times, yet no sound left her throat. She was so speechless that even her mandibles failed to produce their nervous chitter. This carried on until Boxy traded places with Zira in a puff of smoke. The succubus barely caught a glimpse of the stalker running away on all tens, no doubt on her way to hide in the darkest corner of the Dryad's domain. The confused seductress looked at the others. Ambrosia smiled with a bit too much enthusiasm. Fizzy hid her face in her hands, as if trying to shield herself from taking any cringe damage. Cora just stood there with an oddly worried look.
Okay. What did I miss?
The Boxy show couldn't be broadcasted outside the Beyond, and the only thing her master had told her was that it had contracted a stalker demon. As a result, Zira had been left almost completely out of the loop.
This might be bad, Bubble Butt, Cora spoke up. The new girl, the one that just skittered away? She just yelled out that she loved the boss.
You're sure of this?
The succubus asked in a stern voice.
She said she loved Master? Those words exactly?
Oh, yeah. Loud and clear. The boss just brushed her off, but... yeah.
Oh, crap. This might get ugly.
What's the big deal?
Fizzy butted in.
Are you getting jealous or something?
Of course not. Don't be silly.
Zira felt quite confident in her position as her master's tastiest snack, and that was as close to a genuine romantic relationship that thing would ever commit to. The thing that concerned her and Cora was something else entirely.
Then what's got your panties in a bunch?
The golem insisted.
Stalkers have a hard time telling the difference between affection and appetite.
In other words, Drea's confession most likely meant that she didn't want to date Boxy, but to dine on it. General information. You may skip to the next part. Dreaheath Unilephile Myromicrator. Stalker. Hornet. Female. 814 years old. Level 39, Stalker. Level 27, Rogue. 2,284 out of 2,284 HP. Plus 4 per second. 1,465 out of 1,565 MP. Plus 1.7 per second. Attributes. Strength, 234. Dexterity, 644. Agility, 586. Endurance, 410. Intelligence, 293. Wisdom, 175. Mental fortitude, 586. Stalker skills. Stalk, level 10. Max. Counterspell, level 8. Rending claws, level 7. Blood gorger, level 5. Detect magic, level 4. Magic resistance, level 2. Rogue skills. Assassination, level 9. Misdirection, level 7. Evasion, level 6. Silent sprint, level 4. Other skills. Web spinner, level 6. Venomous sting, level 6.
Part 2.
Kira woke up the next day as per usual. She had her morning interactions with Rowana, making sure the elf felt loved and appreciated. She played a bit with Minik, who had very nearly been forgotten about back in the dungeon, and fed it some dried fruits that the couple had bought the day before. The cat girl eventually began to leave the house in order to attend Fayhorn's ranger course, but Minik seemed strangely determined to follow her outside. The mini-mimic had probably grown overly attached to what it probably saw as its bigger cousin, and would not settle down unless Boxy was nearby.
Why don't you just take him along?
Rowana suggested.
I don't think Mr. Fayhorn would appreciate me bringing a pet to class, especially not with our line of work. Okay, tell you what. Since I have the time, why don't we both go? If this Fayhorn character doesn't let you look after it during the day, then I'll bring it home with me. But someone might try to steal it again.
Yep!
The cat girl hugged the gilded box closer to her chest, as if to protect it. That was actually genuine concern on Boxy's part, since it already considered Minik to be part of its collection of shinies. The shapeshifter was certain it could handle another theft attempt, as long as it was around. A weakling like Rowana, however, stood no chance. Actually, that was also a good point.
You might even get hurt. Sweetie, please. I'm not some frail damsel that can't take care of herself,
she insisted.
Believe it or not, I've been living alone for years. The thug from yesterday just caught me by surprise, that's all.
Indeed, though the elf's alchemist job wasn't a combat-oriented profession, it still afforded her certain means of self-defense. Her father had taught her to always have a small arsenal of capsules and vials hidden on her person whenever she went out. These contained a selection of adhesives, gases, acids, and elixirs that could fend off an assailant while she either escaped or called for help. Admittedly, it had been a long while since she'd had to resort to these measures, but she felt confident that some random hoodlum wouldn't get the better of her again.
Really? So you'd be fine with Mr. Fayhorn finding out about our relationship?
Ah, he's really sharp, Rowie. I'm sure he'll be able to instantly tell that you and I are girlfriends.
It was a bit of a low blow on Boxy's part, but it wasn't above using some mild manipulation to get its way.
All right, fine,
Rowana conceded.
I'll make sure Minnick stays put. Hand it over.
Yeah.
The elf took the living jewelry box from Kira and held it tight against her chest. The critter struggled a bit, but settled down when it felt her chest pillows press against its underside. This led Boxy to conclude that, as odd as it seemed, the genderless Minnick definitely liked breasts. Well, the thing was technically part demon, so it didn't seem unreasonable for it to have certain urges. Unless, of course, the doppelganger misunderstood its tastes. But now wasn't the time to speculate on such trifling details. Having resolved the matter of pet care, Kira left the house and made her way to the central consortium building. This time, she used the regular walkway rather than swinging around on vines, as she had gotten an earful about it from Rowana. Having to pretend to care about her opinion, the shapeshifter resolutely climbed up the large, circular staircase all the way around the outside of the hilt tree. Once it got to the upper branch, it rode one of the floating elevator platforms down to the ground and proceeded along its usual route from there. It arrived to class fashionably late in accordance with Kira's character, then proceeded to make nice with the rest of the trainees, not forgetting to pay special attention to the tasty-smelling Leah. The green-haired elf opened up after yesterday and confessed she had been targeted by bullies during her childhood because of her quarter-human lineage. She claimed this experience helped her partly understand what she imagined Kira and Rowana were going through. The whole conversation was quite touching and slightly emotional. Boxy's head wasn't in it, because of the troubling reports it received regarding its new familiar. According to Snack, Arms, and Ambrosia, Claws apparently tried to build herself a lair or nest of some sort, which involved webbing up a part of the dungeon's interior. Her stalker body allowed her to produce a near unlimited amount of sticky spider silk that shot out from her palms and thick, sturdy ropes. She could also discharge the same stuff from the tips of her claws in thin, fine strands. The stalker was then able to spend MP to alter the strand's elasticity, thickness, or stickiness at will, all as part of her web spinner skill. Boxy initially failed to see this as an issue. Those webs were conjured entirely through magic, which meant they would disappear into nothingness after a short while. However, a stalker's webbing seemed to be special. Apparently, this sticky silk could persist for weeks or maybe even months if left undisturbed, even if the demon that created them was sent back to the beyond. Still, the Dryad's domain had been established within an incredibly spacious cavity in Ambrosia's trunk, so it wasn't as if Claw's hobby was getting in the way. The real trouble had begun when Snack realized that her new co-contractor's webs looked, in the succubus's own words, deliciously flammable. She had then proceeded to test this theory out by flinging a fireball at the barn-sized mass of stalker silk that Claws had spent all morning making. Snack's hunch proved right when the entire thing went up in flames, blazing out of existence in a matter of seconds. This naturally made the spider girl incredibly pissed off, as she had been planning to mope about in her new spider home until Boxy returned to the dungeon. The shapeshifter's orders prevented the stalker from resolving this matter by murdering the ever-loving crap out of the slutty pyromaniac. Claws instead handled this dilemma by paralyzing Snack with her venomous sting, wrapping her up in a cocoon of webs, and hanging her from a high branch somewhere outside the dungeon. The succubus eventually recovered enough to burn off her bonds, but the two of them were clearly at each other's throats. Arms, on the other hand, had reached some sort of silent agreement with Claws, and the two avoided each other completely. A physical confrontation between them was just impossible, as the fiend was the worst type of combatant a stalker demon could go up against, stubborn, sturdy, and armored enough to deflect her attacks. Even if Claws' natural weapons were sharp enough to slice through meat and bone, they were nowhere near durable enough to penetrate the metallic plating that fiends could manifest. Bottom line was, while Arms and Snack got along with one another, Claws was left as something of an outcast. Boxy decided this could not be allowed to continue, as it was steadily learning that interpersonal relationships could make or break an otherwise outstanding adventurer team. That wasn't quite the same as a group of monsters and demons bound together by a bunch of magical contracts, but some of it still held true. Even if the three demons could be ordered to work together, true cooperation was not something that could be made possible through contracts alone. Come to think of it, didn't something like this happen before? Boxy thought back on when it first acquired Arms, and the outright hostile way she treated Snack over the next few days. Although the then-mimic lacked the mental capacity and emotional understanding to notice or care about their relationship, it could not recognize just how bad it had been. The succubus and fiend had not gotten along the slightest, and that was putting it lightly. Though they still bickered about this and that every now and then, their relationship had become significantly less hostile since then. The catalyst that allowed for such a thing to happen had been Boxy's permission to allow its familiars to sort their issues out among themselves as fellow demons. Therefore, the solution to this latest interpersonal conflict was a simple one.
Just for today, I'm allowing you to kill, maim, and murder your fellow familiars all you want.
The shapeshifter sent the same mental command to Snack, Arms, and Claws. It then made sure to turn on the auto-repair function of the dungeon's terrain sculpting module and told Ambrosia to record what was about to happen with the surveillance net. This put a temporary strain on the Corps' MP reserves, but it would allow Boxy to review the footage later and get a better idea of what its demons were capable of. Ideally, the shapeshifter would have liked to observe the festivities as they unfolded, but was currently preoccupied with the hunting and tracking exercises that Kira had been assigned. The truly difficult part of Fayhorn's classes was practicing the marksman martial arts. Activating them was simple enough, almost as if casting a spell with one's body, but the problem was they could trigger the chaotic disposition skill's random magical effects. There was this one time when the skill caused a small, localized earthquake around Kira, or when it suddenly turned her body invisible. But not her equipment. Boxy had been able to keep such side effects hidden for the moment, but that skill was an accident waiting to happen. After all, something like a newbie ranger suddenly bursting into flames for no discernible reason was bound to invite the wrong kind of attention, especially if said newbie emerged unscathed. The young doppelganger was therefore forced to make every plausible excuse it could think of to avoid using any of those martial arts while other people were around. Since part of the day's exercise was a light hunt, Boxy's ranger job finally reached level 15. It picked up the Whisper Wind skill, which could be used to stealthily communicate with others at long distances. Boxy was not very enthusiastic about it, as it really didn't need such a skill. However, it was a necessity for fitting in as Kira. Fayhorn was training them up to be scouts and spotters, so this skill was mandatory in his opinion. If it wasn't for that guy, Boxy would have definitely opted for the magic arrows skill instead, which could be used to conjure specialty ammunition out of thin air. But, in the end, the ranger job's main function was to serve as Kira's cover, so it was not that big a deal if Boxy picked up a few less-than-stellar skills. Besides, it wasn't as if these abilities were completely useless. Whisper Wind could, for instance, be used to stealthily communicate with Fizzy or the shapeshifter's mirror images, who couldn't hear its mental commands. Once class was done for the day, Kira hit the library, this time to study up on the various gods and their respective taboos. The monster's faith attribute would grow steadily over time thanks to the various all-attribute bonuses it earned on a regular basis, but it had to be careful of accidentally contracting taboo again. Thankfully, the consortium's extensive library had plenty of information regarding the divine beings that made up Terrania's pantheon. The only exception was Nobunaga, the god of change. Boxy's patron was considered a minor deity shrouded in obscurity, so his motivations, likes, and dislikes were largely unknown to the general public. That was hardly an issue, though, as a certain champion of chaos would be more than happy to regale Boxy with Timothy's lore. For the time being, however, the shapeshifter focused on reading up about the asshole that had given it so much trouble last night. That being was Goroth, the god of earth and patron deity of artists, artisans, and craftsmen. Much like Fizzy explained yesterday, he was the type that favored honest, hard work above all else, and despised those who sought shortcuts by perverting the earth's most precious gifts. In practical terms, this meant that any mortal who permanently transmuted something into silver, gold, platinum, mithril, orichalcum, or cinium